Classic Country, 1450 AM, 103.5 FM, KBBS. Good morning. This is Community Speaks, brought to you by The Prescription Shop on Fort Street. I'm Brady Safranik, and joining me in studio is Cheyenne Stewart and Bud Stewart with Wyoming Game and Fish. Guys, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Good morning.
How you doing, Brady?
Doing very well, thank you. And we're going to start with Cheyenne, going to talk a little bit about some moose survey info we got.
Yeah, so on last Friday, we got in a helicopter and flew Area 34 for moose and counted 51 moose, which for that area is quite a bit for seeing from the helicopter. We haven't counted that many since 2006 for these surveys. Is that right? Yeah, it looks like 2008 we counted 53. So pretty good numbers this year.
What have kind of been the numbers in between there when you haven't hit the 50 mark?
The last 2 years was kind of low. So last year we counted 29, the year before 24. Way back when, in like 2003, we counted 98. But really, since then, 50's been pretty high. So
isn't it funny that we can say way back when and it still starts with 2000?
Yeah. Fair enough. And I wasn't even here then. So for me, 2 years ago seems like way back when.
Sure, absolutely.
So the reason we do these counts is to get an idea of how many moose there are total, and also if we can figure out if it's a male or a female or a calf, then we can try to get an idea of what our ratios are, which can be hard this time of year because I'd say 90% of the moose we saw that were bulls had already shed their antlers, and so we're trying to look for other clues to find out if it's a bull or a cow. So we definitely found a couple that we couldn't classify, so we found seven that we just call unclassified moose. And you know, we're flying with a helicopter and we don't really want to push the moose around too much or disturb them too much, especially because we're coming in hopefully this weekend to do some helicopter capture operations, and so we don't want those moose to be too riled up. And so
what's a capture operation?
So we've got this collaring study going on right now for moose, and so our goal is to get 60 radio collars out in all of the Bighorn Mountains, and right now we're sitting around 35, and so there's a bunch more collars that we're trying to get on cow moose only. And so that started last winter. And so we're trying to tie in all this information together from our aerial counts and classifications, also with these collaring operation. So with the count, though, what we did find of those 51 moose, our ratio for adult males was 84 to 100 cows, which is pretty good and pretty comparable to previous years. So that kind of fluctuates up and down, but 84 bulls for 100 cows is a pretty good ratio for this area.
Okay. And so how often do you do one of these moose surveys?
We do these surveys every year, and we do it sometime between November and February, and really that comes down to weather. So ideally, you get a storm in, you get fresh snow, and then you get a clear, calm, windless day. But, I mean, we've all been through this winter. Good luck planning.
Finding a calm day.
Exactly. So we actually got lucky and we got really good conditions on Friday. And the fresh snow helps because you can see fresh tracks. And then you can follow those tracks and try to figure out where that moose might be. Because believe it or not, even though moose are really big animals, they just disappear really fast once they get in that timber. And so sometimes they can actually be hard to find. And it's interesting, since we've already been radio collaring moose in this area, we knew when we flew that there were 12 radio collared moose that we should have seen out on the landscape. And we only saw 5 of them. And so that means we missed 7 moose for sure of the collared ones. And that gives you some indication of we saw 51 moose, we saw 5 of the 12 that are collared, and so potentially there could be at least double the number of moose in that area that we surveyed of what we saw. And like I said, you can miss them. So we'll sometimes see a moose and it'll run into the timber, and we'll circle back around to try to figure out, was it a bull, was it a cow, was it more than one moose? And you know exactly where that thing disappeared, and you just can't find it again. And so it's almost no surprise that we're definitely missing some, and you can't see everything while you're up there.
Sure. And what are some of the things you use this information for?
Well, a lot of it is to see trends of the population. Is it on an increasing trend, a decreasing trend? Is it fairly stable? And then further, we'll use that information to help design our hunting seasons. And so partly in this study, tied with this collar data, we might be able to use the data and, like I said, compare what we saw versus what we should have seen with the collared moose, and that might help us get at an actual population estimate too.
Okay. And so when are you looking to go do the next moose survey again next year about this time over the winter?
Exactly. Next year about this time over the winter. Could be as early as November, could be as late as now. But we'll be doing a lot of other moose-related stuff coming up in the next year with this study going on.
Okay, excellent. Talking with Cheyenne Stewart here, Buffalo Wildlife Biologist. Thank you for the info on the moose survey.
Thanks for having me this morning. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
You know, Brady, the one thing I might add on those on the moose survey, you know, Cheyenne mentioned that we may do those as early as November, and it kind of depends on when the our elk season ends. You know, because we might irritate some elk hunters if we're still having a season in November or even, you know, December, and we're flying a helicopter.
Yeah, here comes the helicopters. They're trying to
count moose.
Down.
And so, you know, we kind of tend to try to stay away from that, you know, that situation. Now, you know, this year, of course, we had cow elk seasons until December 31. So, but if we can, you know, stay away from that conflict, we really try to. So. But yeah, it was a good year for seeing moose, even though, like Cheyenne said, they miss some because they're just, you think up in a helicopter you can see a big black blob, you know, down there really easy. It's not that easy to do sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, anything else you wanted to chime in with, Cheyenne, before we
I guess the last thing I'll a calf ratio this year of 47 calves per 100 cows, and that's pretty spot on with our average over the last over 10 years. And so we're looking pretty good for in terms of just population viability at a saw a good number of calves out there. So
when you're keeping those numbers pretty similar to years before, or at least what you might consider healthy numbers, does that kind of mean that the way you're setting up hunting seasons and stuff like that seems to be going correctly?
That's the goal, and that's the hope. Yeah, absolutely. And we do see dips and rises. So this year we have 47 calves for 100 cows. Last year was just 21, but we had a pretty small sample size last year. So there's a lot that plays into it. They're never just hard numbers. But the previous year in 2015, we were way up at 67 calves per 100 cows. So it's just kind of ways that we compare what we're seeing to previous years and how that fits into different trends that we've observed over previous years. But in general, it looks like we're sitting pretty well right now for moose in this area.
Yeah, it seems like with those numbers, you got to have kind of a general between this number and this number looks good, because if you try and get it, you know, right on a hard line, there's too many variables involved.
Exactly. And moose can be interesting since they raise their calves for a little bit longer. They might not breed every single year. And so it's possible you could get cycles where you just happen to have more females that bred that year versus the previous year.
Baby boomers.
It's possible. It can happen. And so, yeah, this is why these long-term trends we pay attention to, and we don't get too worked up about a single year unless there's something else going on, like a really major winter or a really severe drought. That's why we like to look at those long-term trends.
All right. Thank you so much for the info this morning.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And, Bud, we've got a few other things to hit on this morning, including some important dates that are coming up pretty quick.
Well, speaking of moose, one week from today, actually, February 28th, is the deadline for folks to put in for moose, bighorn sheep, and mountain goat. That application period started on January 2nd,
okay,
and it'll end on February 28th. So just want to remind folks, get those applications in. You don't want to miss out on that.
Don't procrastinate
is exactly right. And then along with that, wild bison too. The bison that started February 1st, so it's the month of February. But February 28th, important date here to remember that it's the deadline, so don't miss that.
All right. And then something coming up here, March as well.
Yeah, the first 20 days of March is the bear bait registration renewal. So if you had a bear bait registered last year and you want to renew that this coming year, there are several ways that you can do that. If you had one last year, you can go online and do a lot of that. But so if you want to renew that same site, you got to do it that first 20 days of March, and that's pretty important time period for bear hunters, because some of them have a bear baiting site that they've had for years and they absolutely don't want to lose it. So do that March 1 to 20. And then March 21 to March 31, there's no bait registrations during that period. But then starting April 2nd, and typically that's April 1st, but this year April 1st is on a Sunday, so it's the next business day. So starting April 2nd this year, then people can go in and register bait sites that have not already been registered. So new sites, somebody that's never had one, somebody wants to change, that'll start taking place April 2nd. And you pretty much have to do that at a Game Fish regional office. So folks will have to come up to Sheridan to do that. And, you know, it starts at 8 a.m. And I'm thinking that we'll probably start seeing people line up Sunday afternoon, you know, because it's going to be on Monday morning. We had some folks last year come in sat in our parking lot from, oh, I don't know, 2, 3 in the afternoon the day before, because they wanted to be first
like
in line.
Black Friday, they're camping out.
It is. It's just like getting concert tickets or, you know, tickets to an important football game or whatever. People will set outside and wait all night to be first in line to get that. So so that's some dates coming up. And just a reminder along that line, this last year was the first year this happened, but if bear hunters that did not provide a GPS location of where they placed their bear baits in 2017, and that had to be turned in by December 31 of 17, if those weren't provided, then you'll not be able to renew your bear baiting site that you held last year. You won't be able to come in the first 20 days of March and renew that. You'll have to wait until March or April 2nd to come in and try to get that site again. So, but anyway, just want to remind folks about that bear baiting stuff. And again, as Cheyenne mentioned, and you guys talked about a little bit about the moose and season setting, we're in the big game season setting season, basically. You know, April or February and March, we have a lot of internal discussions about what season should be. Biologists meeting with wardens and supervisors and get all those set. And then we have a series of open houses and then one final public meeting. And the folks here in Buffalo, their open house this year will be Tuesday, March 27th. And that starts at 4 o'clock, and it'll go till 7 at the Johnson County Library. So it is an open house format, so that doesn't mean you have to be there at 4 o'clock.
Okay.
If you come at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, you know, same thing. There'll be all the information there. Come in and sit down and talk to, you know, Cheyenne or Jim Seaman or I think Dan Teal may be here. We actually have two open houses on that day on Tuesday. We're going to have one here in Buffalo and one in Gillette same day. So we're kind of, you know, dividing up personnel. But there'll be some Game Fish people at the Buffalo Library or at the Johnson County Library there on Tuesday, March 27th. During that open house, talk about seasons, what's proposed for deer, elk, antelope seasons around here. And We'll also have all the statewide seasons. So if somebody's interested in knowing what the, you know, sheep season is going to be over in Cody or Jackson, we'll have those too. That information was proposed, and then folks can provide written comments, oral comments, and so we have that whole series of open house. We'll have six of those. We have one in Buffalo and Case, and then on KC, that'll be a public meeting, and actually it's on Wednesday, March 28th. So if somebody doesn't get to Buffalo, they can go down to KC the next night. That's at the Johnson County Library there in KC.
Okay.
That is a public meeting, so you should probably be there at 6 o'clock to kind of hear the spiel and stuff. But, yeah, we've got them, like I say, Buffalo, KC. We'll have one at Hewlett, Sheridan, Gillette. And so we'll have, I think Game and Fish is having like, I think I counted up 36 or 37 meetings, these type of open house meetings around the state for the season setting process. So, and then once we go through those open houses that week, we'll go back late that week, look at comments and look at proposed changes that somebody might say, and then we will have what we call the final season setting meeting. That will actually be in Sheridan at the Sheridan office on April 2nd at 7 p.m. at our Game and Fish office up there. And then once those proposals are done and we discuss those and get those out, they're sent down to our headquarters office. And at that point, then they're all put together. And I believe at the Lander Commission meeting I want to say it's April 24th, 5th, 6th time period in there. That's when our commission will vote on those seasons, and then once they're voted on, then they're final at that point. You know, then the actual regulation booklet will be printed and distributed. So that's kind of the process between now and kind of the third week in April.
Okay.
But we're discussing those things. I think most of the proposals are pretty well finalized at this point, and so we're looking forward to having those meetings here in about a month, and hopefully we'll see a lot of the people from around here show up and talk to them more about those seasons and stuff. So,
and as we are inching towards the end of February here, people start having spring on the mind, and of course, people have ice fishing on the mind now, but as things start to melt, fishing on the mind, you guys are actually hiring seasonal AIS technicians right now.
We are. We're in the process of hiring, and for those folks that don't know, AIS stands for Aquatic Invasive Species, and these are the people that if you own a boat, I'm sure you've probably encountered one somewhere, whether you went to put your boat in it, keyhole or dismet, or if you went out of state and come back in, you have to stop at one of these check stations. And those people that man those are seasonal employees that we hire, and we're in the process of hiring some right now. And we need some for Sheridan, Keel Reservoir, and Sundance. And if anybody's interested in those, and you know, you realize you're checking boats in the summertime, so a lot of it is weekend and holiday work. Your days off would be during, you know, maybe a Wednesday or a Thursday or whatever. So if somebody is interested in that, they should contact our aquatic invasive species coordinator in the Sheridan office. His name is Mike Locatelli, Mike gave me a cell phone number here to call, so if somebody's ready and think they might be interested and want to talk to Mike about that, grab a pen and I'll give you that number. It's 307-683-7715. So give Mike a call or just call the Sheridan office, ask for the AIS guy or ask for Mike, and you can visit with him about the job and see if you even want to apply or not.
So. Now, you mentioned someone has a boat, they take it out of state, they bring it back, they need to have it checked.
They have to have it inspected, yes.
For that person, how is the best way to clean it? Will just soap, water, and a little brush get rid of it?
Yeah, you know, you can, the motto for that whole program is clean, drain, and dry. So if you get your boat cleaned out, and you know, a lot of folks do that routinely anyway, they'll clean out and get the water out of your, you know, out of your bilge and live wells, and drain all that water out. Make sure they're, you know, cleaned out, and then dry them out good. And that goes a long ways to protecting. And if you have, you know, these folks are, you know, they're looking for a lot of things, but the two big things are the quagga mussels and the zebra mussels that are really kind of all around us. And we don't have them in Wyoming yet, cross our fingers. But, you know, we do have some other invasive plants. And so if one of these boat trailers stops at one of our check stations, there's some plants hanging on the trailer. Those get removed. So, you know, just ask people if you want to, you know, have a pretty fast and quick inspection. If you do it prior to coming to one of those check stations, clean off all that stuff, it goes pretty quickly, you know.
Sure.
And, you know, we have the one we have in Sundance, of course, along I-90, we get a lot of boats from east of us, Michigan, the south come, and we have checked. We usually check two or three boats a year that will have live zebra or quagga mussels on them when they stop there in Sundance. And then it becomes much more rigorous. We'll spend a lot of time getting those off, or I mean, if there's really definitely live, we can quarantine that boat for 30 days.
You say, so, turn around and go back to the state you came from.
Yeah. We you know, they can do that. But you know, a lot of times these are boats that somebody in Tennessee purchased, and it's a big boat.
Sure.
I mean, they don't take that out of the water so it's been sitting in the water somewhere, and somebody in Bellingham, Washington might have purchased that boat, so they're hauling it. That's typically a lot of times what we see are boats like that, you know, that come and that'll have those live critters on it, and we got to get them scraped off you know, hot water is a good 100. These things can't survive 140 degree water for very long.
Okay.
So we have at each one of those, we have a power pressure washer with heated water.
Okay.
And we can give them a good good wash with that, and that'll typically do it. So
okay. And with winter and cold weather, this is a critical time for wildlife.
Well, you know, we've talked about this probably the last two or three shows, and here this just the last day or two again. You know, we had well below zero last night and the night before, and this snow, and it's, you know, it takes a pretty heavy toll on deer and antelope, to a certain degree on elk, and then a lot of other wildlife, birds, you know, pheasants or sharptails or whatever, so it is a critical time. Those birds have, and those mammals have built up fat reserves, and you know, if they can't get good food and stuff during the winter, and so we get a lot of snow, prevents them from doing that, and they get harassed, they get moved all the time. You know, it's definitely difficult on them. So, you know, it's a great time to view wildlife and take some photos. We were just at McDonald's this morning, and TJ Tavigi, who drives from here to Sheridan to the Y, was telling us there's a bunch of elk along the interstate up here between here and Sheridan. And he said yesterday would have been a great time for taking photos. And a lot of people like to do that, you know. They like to take photos during the wintertime, and that's fine. That's great that people are out doing that. But kind of keep your distance, you know. Don't try to get right up in their face, so to speak.
A selfie with the moose.
No, don't do that.
Or an elk, or, right. or anything,
yeah. So, you know, it's just one of those deals that you just got to, you know, kind of use some common sense when you're doing that.
He was saying from the interstate he could see the elk?
Yeah, there's that's not uncommon. There's a place between here and Sheridan that when we get some winter weather like this, they'll sometimes come almost within 200-300 yards of the interstate.
Wow.
And there's 10 or 11 big bulls there that, of course, everybody likes to see. But also there were some cows and calves yesterday as well. So, okay. Yeah, it's an interesting place. I'll see, the last few times I've gone, in the evening, there'll be a vehicle set along the road with a spotting scope watching them and stuff.
Sure.
So it's, if you know about it, there are people that know about it tend to pull off the road there and stop and look at them. So,
okay.
You know, and just while we're talking about that, Brady, there are some areas on the Bighorn National Forest that are kind of off limits to, especially during the wintertime, to motorized vehicles. And those areas are typically the areas of working. They're right behind our the Kearns and Amsden areas up by Sheridan, Dayton, and then the Bud Love here northwest of town. There's an area on the Bighorn National Forest that's off limit to motorized vehicle, and again, we have a lot of those areas sometimes winter moose, and if we have a lot of, you know, snow machines flying through there a lot, they get bumped, and so it can be kind of hard on them. So we just let people know that kind of stay out of those areas. Well, it's illegal to go in there, actually. You could get a ticket from the Forest Service for having a motorized vehicle in those areas. So,
okay. And you know what? We've been talking a lot about the wildlife. You know, a couple other things. There's a lot of vehicle wildlife collisions. Also, a lot of times people's dogs kind of chasing wildlife, disrupting wildlife.
Yeah, you know, people like to, you know, take your dog for a walk and stuff, and the wildlife gets close to town. They don't move a lot. But if your dog's out there and every time you go out, the dog chases them away, and, you know, that can be a little hard on them too. So just kind of keep your dog under control if that's the deal. And now we have some slick roads again with, packed snow and ice on there. And if you're traveling at a, you know, kind of a maybe a higher rate of speed than you should be, and there's animals along the road, just a higher chance of a collision. So just remind folks, kind of slow down and watch for wildlife along the road. So
it was about a week ago, maybe last weekend. I was heading to a basketball game, had to go over the mountain, and just as I was coming around there, before you get in tent sleep, there's a little RV park down there.
Yep.
And there was probably 8 deer just right in the middle of the road as I came around the curve, and it was a little bit icy, so thankfully they, you know, I was slowing down, but there was no way I was going to be able to stop before I got to them, and thankfully they had all gotten themselves off the road. I was able to slow down just enough.
You know, and one other thing that we see is we'll get deer that'll be hit, and they're laying along the edge of the road, and of course, this time of year, we get a lot of raptors, and we'll get bald eagles, golden eagles feed on those. Well, those birds, of course, wintertime, they're gluttons, you know. I mean, they might not get another easy meal. So they'll just eat to where they can hardly get off the ground flying. And so then they're sitting on that animal right along the road, and here comes a big 18-wheeler comes flying by, and those birds try to fly, and they can run right into that truck. So we see some bald and golden eagles, as well as some other raptors, get hit. So just want people to be aware of that, kind of watch, and try to avoid those situations.
Sure. And game and fish officials can't be everywhere, so you guys like to ask people to kind of help report any illegal wildlife-related activity they might notice.
Yeah, you know, we always have a little poaching going on every year. And, of course, you know, once deer and elk drop their antlers and the moose, then it seems the poaching kind of slows down maybe a little bit. But if just asking people, if you see somebody out there that just doesn't look right to you, you know, let us know. You know, don't go encounter them yourself and ask them what they're doing and all that. You know, I mean, there may be a very legitimate reason, but just let us know. If you can get a license plate number and a description of the vehicle, you know, just color and maybe the kind, and note the time. It's always good to know kind of exactly the time, and then, you know, there's several ways to report that activity. You can call your local game warden, call the Sheridan office. We have a stop poaching hotline. That's all that information's on our website, Brady, so they can call, and there's even some ways you can text the keyword WGFD and message to a number. So, but like I say, that's all on the website. Would encourage people, if you're interested, that go take a look at that and find out how to do that and just report some of that stuff.
But a couple of fishing regulations notes. There's a public meetings being held late April and early May, and also a reminder about moving live fish across state lines, that sort of thing.
Yeah, you know, we're in that season of for big game season setting, but also after that, when we get to late April, early May, our fish division folks will be having some fishing regulation meetings. And so they're just asking, talk to the fish division people, and they said, well, when you're on the radio show, kind of put out the word that we'll be having those meetings. The dates haven't been set yet, but they're going to be in that time frame of late April, early May. And be thinking about maybe some fishing regulation changes, and they have a couple things they're thinking about. And so we'll have those maybe, you know, a future radio show here. We'll know more about when those times really are and maybe what those regulations being proposed, and we'll talk about them. But just want to kind of get that set in people's minds that be thinking about it.
Sure. So, And the other thing I mentioned there was the moving of live fish. If you're, say, to go up to Montana and fish, when you bring them back, they got
to
be dead.
Right. You know, we have some folks here in Sheridan that go up to Tongue River Reservoir and do a little ice fishing. And you know, they like to fish with minnows. And they can, you know, you can purchase minnows here in I think Sportsler has them a couple places in Sheridan. But you cannot take those minnows into Montana. You cannot cross the state line with live fish. And likewise, if you go up there and buy minnows in Montana fish, you have, you know, a couple dozen minnows, you want to think, well, I'm coming back tomorrow, I'll take them home, bring them back. You can't do that. You can't bring those live minnows back into Wyoming. It's just that's the regulation. That's how it is. And so just want to remind people, don't do that. I talked to the Montana game warden, Jordan Straley, who has the area of his responsibility is Tongue River Reservoir. And he said he's written a couple tickets to folks from Wyoming that brought live fish up. So he wanted me to remind people, don't take him up there, and then he won't have to write you a ticket.
Yeah, there you go. So, and with ice fishing, you know, still the ice is pretty good. Of course, we've had a really cold couple of weeks here recently. So the ice fishing probably everywhere is still pretty safe.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's really, really safe, you know, as far as because we're seeing ice thicknesses of, I'm hearing a foot, 14 inches, 18 inches some places, you know, I think, you know, with 18 inches of ice, I would never recommend this, but you could probably take a gravel truck full of gravel on 18 inches of ice.
I wouldn't recommend that either, and I wouldn't be anywhere near it.
No, but I think you could probably do that. Wyoming Game and Fish Department recommends that people never drive on the ice, not even a snow machine or a four-wheeler. I know people do it, and it's an easy way to get around, but even though there's might be 14 inches of ice close to shore or where you take off, if you get out in the middle of the lake, you might hit a pressure ridge or something.
You're always taking a risk.
You're always taking a risk. I don't think right around here, but I think there's been a couple vehicles go through in Boyson maybe already this year and stuff. So I know it's an easy way, and a lot of people that can't walk very good will consider it, but boy, if you do that, just be extremely careful.
Yeah,
you know,
and people should pay attention to the different rules on different lakes as far as how many poles you can fish, that sort of thing, and always be safe when on the ice.
Yeah, you know, we get the question a lot of times. Well, it's ice fishing. How many tip ups could I have? And we have what's called a winter ice fishing provision, where when you're fishing through the ice, you're allowed more than the customary two poles. But that's only allowed on two lakes in the Sheridan region. And that's Keyhole Reservoir and Lake De Smet. All the rest of the bodies of water, you have to, you're kind of restricted to your two poles. And then we also have some areas where statewide minnows, and these are the minnows that Sportsler are selling and the places in, I think, the little store in Story and maybe Sheridan, a couple places, but those are the fathead minnows that they obtain from the dealer in Arkansas. They're certified fathead minnows, and folks can get those, and you can use those minnows in Keyhole, of course, but also Lake De Smet and Healy if you want. So as long as they're those certified fathead minnows, can't catch wild minnows. You know, go set a trap or
what's
or,
the
or
reason whatever. For that?
Mainly spreading fish to areas, unwanted fish to areas. We've had a lot of fish spread around and spend a lot of money trying to get those unwanted species out of water. So that's why we have the minnow regulations that we do. And these are all, like I said, they're certified fathead minnows from that place in Arkansas. So they can be used at those three waters. And then, like you mentioned, safety, you know, we've talked about this probably for the last 3 months, but you know, fish with a buddy and take along a chunk of rope so somebody can pull you out if you fall in. Set of those spikes around your neck or whatever, you can get a grip. Those are always good. And like we mentioned, driving on the ice is just never a good idea. So,
all right. And a reminder about landowner coupons.
Yeah, for those landowners who got coupons from hunters that they hosted last year, they have till March 1st. So they've got just a week here to get those turned in. I think a lot of them have, but just want to remind, if you're a landowner and you're listening and you got some of those stashed somewhere, get those out, get it filled out, and get them to your local game warden, and that has to be done by the 1st of March of 2018. So
okay.
I'll get those done. And then, you know, we're winding down on hunting season. We still have some small game seasons that go until March 1st, and people will probably be getting hunter surveys, so... I think we're pretty much completed with the gray wolf and fall turkey. But you may get one for small game and upland game stuff. Come get those filled out. Those are important components for us for setting seasons, you know, and stuff. So just ask people to do that. And if you provide an email, you'll get an email address, or you'll get an email from us to your address asking you to complete that survey. And real easy to do if you provide an email address. So.
Okay.
But, you know, Brady, and the one last thing here, well, got a couple quick things, and I'll get out of your hair here. But we have the Wyoming Outdoor Hall of Fame, started a number of years ago, where the state honors people that have had a significant contribution to Wyoming and Wyoming's wildlife and wild places. And that Hall of Fame banquet will be in Cody at the Buffalo Bill Center of the West on Thursday, March 15th. And tickets and information, that's all available on our website. But we've got three nominees this year. And, you know, so just want to let people know about that if they're interested in going over to Cody to that Hall of Fame. And the other thing that I know a lot of people have been waiting for this for a long time, the non-resident elk draw was a while back, in about 15 minutes at 10 a.m., the results for those non-residents will be on our website and stuff.
Okay.
So, and people have been chomping at the bit to find out if they drew an elk permit if you're a non-resident. So if you have a brother or cousin or aunt or uncle or whatever that's going to come with you, they should be able to find out here in about 15 minutes if they drew an elk permit in Wyoming.
Okay, so. And so when you say this, you know, you come in, you talk about these drawings quite a bit. So for a non-resident that wants to hunt elk out here, is it that they all have to put their name in this, you know, big bucket and you draw some names out of a hat kind of deal?
Well, that's how it used to be, but we've got a little more sophisticated now.
Okay.
Brady, we can enter, you know, when people apply, they actually put all that information in themselves.
Okay.
So they entered into, go into our website, enter that information in, the area and, you know, their name and all that. And some of that will, if they applied before, they'll all come right up. And then they apply, and that information is all downloaded into a computer program that assigns everybody a totally random number. And then that drawing picks those random numbers. And then that number is, you know, it goes back and is related to that person's name. And then if they draw, that's how they draw. So
okay.
It's a little more sophisticated than that, but it's basically all computer done.
So driven. Is it just randomly done because you only have a select amount you allow to?
Well, we issue, during the first go around, we issue 7,250 licenses to, okay, non-residents. That's a maximum number, or 16% of a limited quota area. And like Area 35, here's a good example, just west of town. So if there's 16%, so if there's a couple hundred licenses total are going to be issued, 16% of that, 32 of those, will go to non-residents.
Okay.
And then, so they've all put their names in the hat, so to speak, with the hat being the computer.
Sure.
And get all done, look at stuff, make sure everybody's got all their information in there, and our folks hit a button and it'll generate those random numbers, go back and pick those 32 people that will get a non-resident elk license in Hunt Area 35.
Okay, and does it matter if you've won before?
Not for elk, not for deer, not for antelope. It does for bighorn, sheep, and moose.
Okay.
Once anybody, resident or non-resident, you have to wait 5 years for, and on a mountain goat, once you get one, you're done. It's a once in a lifetime for mountain goat.
Oh, okay.
So, but yeah, there's a waiting period on moose and sheep, but not for elk or not for deer. Or antelope. You can put in each year if you want.
All right. Talking with Bud Stewart, Sheridan Region Public Information Specialist here for Wyoming Game and Fish. Also had Cheyenne Stewart in earlier. She's a Buffalo Wildlife Biologist. Bud, thank you so much for taking the time here today.
You're welcome, Brady, and hopefully it'll get above zero here in a little bit. But, we've got some cold weather the last couple, 3 days.
Yeah, no kidding. I think we're all ready for some sunshine and some warmer temperatures. Everybody keep that dial tuned, 1450 AM, 103.5 FM, KBBS. This has been Community Speaks, brought to you by The Prescription Shop.